Good afternoon, my name is Kate Manahan, and thank you for joining me for the 174th edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During the show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guest is Mo Kilani. He was born in Amman, Jordan, to Iraqi parents. He and his brother grew up in a family that valued humanity, hard work, and education. At the age of 9, they moved to the United States, first to Texas, and then to Maine, where they have lived since. Mo is a graduate of Chevres High School and is presently finishing his freshman year at Bowdoin College in Brunswick, Maine. Welcome to New Mainer Speak, Mo.
Thank you, Kate. It's very nice of you.
So can you describe for us the Jordan of your childhood memories? What did it look like and feel like to be a kid in Jordan?
Oh, man, it's a lot different. It's a lot different from here. Jordan is nothing like America. It's very simple life. We don't have the things that you have here. I remember I grew up in this one-bedroom basement. It was part of an apartment complex. I lived with my mom, dad, and brother. And it was really simple life. We valued everything we had. For example, we didn't really have flushing toilets. You know, we never had a shower. I remember when I was a kid, we would boil water in a big pot, and then put the pot in the bathroom, and then use little water jugs, and then pour it over your head.
For a bath.
Mm-hmm. That was the way it was like. It was really, really simple. And I never noticed anything different. I mean, I always grew up watching TV, but it wasn't like I thought it was a completely different universe. The place I grew up in was the only place I knew, so it didn't appear to me that we were poor or we were, lived a little bit less of a quality of life.
But what were you watching?
What was I watching? Oh boy, Friends.
Friends?
Friends.
That so was you only. Were living in this non-flushing bathroom apartment.
Yeah.
And you were watching Friends, all living in a lavish, fancy apartment in New York City.
Friends, it was the only thing that we had, it was the only connection we had to America, really.
I bet right now
we just probably started getting season 4 right now, we're always a little bit behind you guys. We never really keep catching up with America, but we watched a lot of Friends. That was America, the American world to us. The way people talked and acted, that's how we thought America was.
Oh.
Which it isn't.
It's not necessarily, is it? And what was your neighborhood like there?
My neighborhood? It was, it looks different. It's all concrete. We don't use any wood. It's very hot. And so, like I said, it's very simple people. Children are always playing outside. There's never a moment stayed inside. You always, get to know your neighborhood. They're kind of like your brothers and sisters. At first, we were kind of like the outcasts because we were Iraqi, and Jordanians don't like Iraqi people because of really what happened. But over time, they kind of started to appreciate us.
You were irresistible.
Irresistible, I would say. So I made, it's very nice. It's a very nice place to live.
Yeah, wonderful. And you said that students there actually have to work much harder in the elementary school grades to learn a language, et cetera. Tell us about the expectations at school for 8-year-olds in Jordan. How did you make it through those challenges?
Oh, there's a lot to expect. It's nothing like here. So people over there, they kind of have to grow up speaking 3 different languages. And of course, it starts out with Arabic. You have to know that, and then you have to know French, because we have a lot of Lebanese migrants, and Lebanon was conquered by France for a short period of time, and for that reason we have to speak French. You know, it's not uncommon to hear French on the streets. You have to speak it, you have to write it, you have to understand it. And then came English, and it's a lot of work. It's very rigorous. You know, we would have like maybe like 3 hours of homework. You come back. I mean, that was really the private schools. That's where I went. It was a lot of work, and much of it was done through the help of my mom. She was kind of like my tutor.
That's so, how you.
Yeah.
That was your secret agent.
That was my secret agent.
Yeah.
Yeah. She valued education, and that's what.
So you would stay home and do flashcards and that kind of learning of English?
I had a tiny little desk, and every day I would come home, and I sit there from maybe like 3 to 6, and I sit there with my mom and, you know, just go through everything I learned that day, and write and speak and learn math and, you know, grammar and all these beautiful things that kind of shaped the way I think today.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What do you think about the kids having such a casual elementary school education here?
Oh, I have mixed feelings because sometimes I think children are just, you know, they're meant to play and have fun and just really enjoy their childhood. But I think if you condition them at a young age to have that kind of good work ethic, I think we would have people would be a lot different. You know, these kinds of influences. You know, in middle school, if they had good work ethic back in elementary school, they probably will still have it in middle school, high school, and it carries on.
Yeah, it's an expectation.
It is an expectation.
Yeah. I have to agree with you. You know, how do we trust ourselves when we find out we're capable? And how do you find out you're capable?
You sit down and do it. Exactly.
I can do it.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. So you knew 3 languages by the time you came here to the United States.
Yes.
And then you've added some more. Your mother's an electrical engineer who helped build the oil pipeline in Iraq. She was probably a pretty good tutor, I would guess.
She was great.
What else did she teach you that you still use today?
She's taught me a lot of things about life. She's taught me a lot of things about good habits. Growing up, I remember since the day I was, you know, maybe 2 or 3, I learned how to make my bed. And it maybe sounds simple, but making your bed every day in the morning really can have this psychological effect that if you have one thing organized in your life, you're probably going to have some other things that are going to come organized as well. It kind of keeps you pretty happy and satisfied with yourself. So if to this day, I still make my bed every morning. And honestly, it gives me a little bit of motivation, you know, to just be like, hey, I got one thing done today, I could do the rest. You know, good work habits, that was always present. She always pushed me to do more, to be more successful. And, you know, over time, I've learned that success leaves some kind of trace. You know, we always grow up, you know, saying to ourselves, I have all these dreams and I don't know if I can make them happen. But in reality, I mean, we look around, there's all these people that are making their dreams come true. And why is that? It's because they have good work habits.
They made their bed in the morning.
They made their bed in the morning. Not kidding.
Well, that's
they wake
really
up
interesting.
Early.
My father went to the military academy, and they weren't allowed to start their day before they made their beds perfectly. It had to bounce a quarter on them, and if the quarter didn't bounce, then it wasn't properly made. And he always espoused the same. My day can't start unless I've made my bed.
Right.
Yeah, so, that's funny you should say that.
Yeah, I learned a lot about just my ideal, you know, image of success. It's there. I'm always pushing for it. I'm always pushing harder to get to that goal. I mean, it's possible. You have to just have self-confidence. You have to have good work habits. You have to believe in yourself. Because if you know, as cliche as it sounds, if you wake up in the morning and you don't have any faith in yourself and you're like, you know, you don't know if you could do this, or you have this big exam and you're not sure. No, you have to kind of just change, look at a different perspective and tell yourself, yeah, I'm going to do it. Yeah, I'm going to try my best. And the best you could do is the best you could do at that moment.
It's pretty insightful. I think you're saying all these successes that you've had in life build on each other. You have the experience of having the success of having your bedmate. So then that takes you over to the next activity. And maybe you have a big lesson to learn.
Mm-hmm.
But you have had some success already and you use that to propel yourself forward.
And I just, you know, my whole life, I've just been looking at what successful people do. What are their habits? And, you know, a look at their habits. In the end, they're a lot like mine. They some people get up early and they make their bed in the morning. They eat breakfast. They go on a walk. They make things happen. They have self-confidence.
Who are these people you look at?
I like Elon Musk quite a bit. I usually, I think one thing I read about, he worked 30 years for his whole life, and every day he slept maybe 4 hours, and this guy would wake up every day, start out these companies, and, maybe sometimes they wouldn't be successful, and they wouldn't be that great, and, sometimes the market crashes or something, and this guy made it happen. He literally went through the craziest amount of stress anybody could imagine, and look where he's at now. He just doesn't take no for an answer. Mm-hmm. And that's what we should do, I think.
I hope people sleep more than that, though.
I do hope so, too.
There's only so long you can go with that and then you crash.
Yeah.
So you remember getting the letter that it was cleared, you were cleared, your family was cleared to move to the United States. Can you tell us what that was like for you? And I'm kind of curious if what you expected.
No,
met with your expectations.
It's something I was waiting for the longest time, and I think when I grew up, I was always like, "Oh, that letter's gonna come soon. It's gonna come soon. It's gonna come soon." It never really did. And then one day I was 9, and the letter actually came, and I couldn't believe it. It's not. It's just didn't seem possible, because at that point I was like, almost 10, and I don't know what America's like. I knew friends, but this is scary. I was scared. I was genuinely scared for what's going to happen, because although I did know it's going to be a lot better than it was where I am now, it's very daunting.
You leave your friends.
You leave your friends.
Your
you
food.
Have to speak in a completely different language, and it came out of nowhere. I'm telling you, it was like, next week you have to pack your bags and you're going, and you're like, what about all my friends that I've lived with and breathed through every day for 9 years? I just have to leave. And that's what we did. We sold everything we had, and we literally came to the United States with only $100 in my mom's pocket, 2 children, and 1 suitcase.
Wow.
And that's all we had.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And one of the children was quite sick.
Yeah,
Your little brother.
He was born with a strange disease, had a lot of epilepsy when he grew up, oxygen couldn't reach his brain, and he was often very, very sick, and I grew up having to take care of that, and remember very vividly waking up for a period of time, midnight, early morning, to go to the hospital and get an oxygen tank so he can feel better. And it wasn't like the worst thing in the world, because he was my brother and I love my brother, and my family is the only thing I have. So, coming to America, I was like maybe a little bit hopeful. But, before we moved here, the doctors said he only had 6 months to live. And when we went to Texas, they said it was actually 2. And that was really scary, because he was the only thing I had.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Khalil, and that means friend in Arabic. And my parents thought I needed a lifetime friend. And, the possibility of losing a lifetime friend really had an impact, and I couldn't believe it. My mom was considering going back to Jordan, Iraq, because he was gonna die, and if we would bury him anywhere, it'd be in our own place. But luckily, when we got to Maine somehow, and I actually think to this day it's a miracle. And I tend to be religious sometimes, but I also tend to be reasonable. But there's these things in life that you can't explain. When we moved here, the doctors looked at his brain scans, first day we come here. He said, this is a completely different child. There's nothing wrong with him. And, my mom was like, that's not possible. We've had to take care of this for years, 4, 5, 6 years. And he was always sick. And how is this possible? The doctors, maybe it's the ocean, maybe it's this. And I I remember very vividly, I was sitting there, and the doctor was talking to my mom, and I was like, this is unreal. This is something beyond me.
Khalil had a spontaneous remission of some miraculous sort.
I kid you not.
And now he plays basketball at Waynefleet.
He doesn't remember.
How
wonderful. He doesn't remember what really happened, but he's successful now, and he's happy, and he's a normal child.
Wow. That's truly impressive.
Yeah.
So if you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guest today is Mo Kilani. He was born in Amman, Jordan, to Iraqi parents and moved to Maine in 2009. He's now a freshman at Bowdoin College. So, Mo, when you did dare to dream of going to college, how did you start to find Bowdoin?
Oh, boy. So when I was when we first moved here, I remember we had our sponsor. His name is Danny Mueller. He's he was one of the first people that greeted us here in Maine. And one day we were driving. I was 10 years old maybe, and we were driving past Brunswick. And he's like, "Look, that's a great college. You know, maybe one day you would want to apply there." And never really thought about it. And I remember senior year comes by, and I was like, well, it's time for me to move on and really go to the next stage. My mom didn't think I would probably go to college just because it's so much money and, you know, it just didn't seem possible. So what I did, I applied to 15 schools. And I applied to all the schools in Maine. I applied to all the schools in Massachusetts. I did whatever I could. And Bowdoin was like the last one I thought I'd get into. I was like, you know, this is not possible. And I remember very specifically that decision after decision came, and I kept getting rejected because, you know, it was 15 schools, and I think it was around the 9th school I got rejected again. And I remember my mom talking to me. She said, you know, whatever happens, don't worry. You know, you're going to be successful, maybe in a different way, but it's okay. Don't stress. And the next school that accepted me was Middlebury, and Middlebury offered a full scholarship, and I couldn't believe my eyes. And the next one was Colgate, and then the last one was Bowdoin, and I couldn't believe it. I said, no way, no way. Out of all these schools that I applied to, who were much easier to get into, of course, Bowdoin accepts me out of all of them, and I think they see some kind of hope in me. And I remember I wrote a very, very personal essay about my life and how I just made it here, and I think that was a big factor.
Sure.
I think
if I were on the admissions team at Bowdoin, I'd be very delighted to know that someone in class spoke 5 languages and knew about the world and had a different work ethic.
Yeah.
You know, you worked 3 jobs in high school and
had
a quite an unusual experience.
It was.
already having a track record of success.
Yeah, and that's...
So in some ways, you've already made it in a number of distinctly different environments. You're a bit of a natural adapter. It probably also helps that you speak Arabic, Spanish, English, French, and are learning Russian. How are you able to master English without an accent? I think that's so remarkable. What's your secret to hearing language with a native ear?
You know, this is a question that I get actually a lot.
I bet.
Like growing up, they say, oh, you don't sound like you're from there. Yeah, I tried pretty hard to do that. I think a lot of immigrants, we all share this one thing, and we all desire to have to master the accent, the American accent. And the way I did it was watch Ellen DeGeneres all the time. And the first reason I did watch her was because one of the first shows I saw her, and she hosted Daniel Radcliffe, which was one of my favorite actors.
Harry Potter.
Oh, no, of course, Harry Potter. That was the only thing I knew growing up in Jordan. That and Friends, and I saw her hosting him, and I was like, oh my god, she's hosting my favorite actors. Maybe her show is somewhat good. And I remember every day, 5th grade, 6th grade, 7th grade, watched Ellen DeGeneres, and I would sometimes repeat to myself, every time she said something, I put on the captions. I remember saying the same thing she would say, so I can master down some kind of accent down. And one day, halfway through 7th grade, poof, somehow.
You mastered it.
I literally went to school. I remember this very well. People were like, you know, you sound a little bit different, you know. You don't have any kind of weird, accent, something, you know, some trails. And I was like, yeah. I worked very hard for that.
Yes, it makes you appear as a second generation immigrant.
Yeah.
As if you were born and raised here.
Yeah, but no. It was really fun. It was really fun.
Congratulations to you. I bet that will open some doors because people will feel less worried that they can't understand you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I do that quite a bit, actually, with other languages.
Oh, you
to
also?
To master the accent. Uh-huh. I sometimes, usually if I'm in a strange situation or I'm in somehow in a taxi and the taxi driver happens to be French, Spanish, some kind of speaks that kind of language, I would take on a different persona and practice that.
Uh-huh.
And I remember, this was funny, it was last semester, I was, you know, it was winter break, I was working in Gorgeous Gelato, and this Russian woman comes in, and I've worked there for 2 years, and never seen anybody from that area. Comes here, and, you know, she starts speaking Russian, you know, because, you know, she's new, she's an immigrant, and she knows that my boss speaks Russian. And so I was like, well, I speak Russian. So we start having a conversation, and that was the way, you know, I get to practice. And it's pretty fun.
You know, you have a look that if you told me you were from Colombia, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah.
If you told me you were from Russia, I'd be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. It's all, you're, I still do it the same
man.
Way. I just watch movies and TV shows and just replicate.
And do you use that in a musical way too? I know you played in the jazz band. I bet that ear works for music and accents.
Yeah. I played the saxophone since I moved here. They had a school program and you could learn some kind of instrument for free. And you
isn't that the coolest?
You know, it's crazy. And I was like, wow, okay. Picked the most strange looking one and the one I've never seen before. And I was like, all right, saxophone. And played it all the way till high school. And I'm planning on taking it again.
And more experience mastering something. More success.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So what kinds of classes are you taking at Bowdoin these days? You have a major that looks appealing?
No, I tend to like a lot of things. there's a lot of things in this world that interest me and bring some kind of curiosity. But one of the most interesting ones so far was psychology. And the reason why is because I'm starting to understand all these things that humans do and the tendencies and these patterns, and it makes a lot of sense. Makes a whole lot of sense. Not only has it helped me just, you know, improve my work ethic, but not, you know, I start to just read people in a different way when I meet them for the first time, and that's crazy. That's amazing. So I took right now I'm taking psychology, take a Spanish class, taking Arabic, taking a Russian class, taking Russian history.
You're such a linguist. I love it.
I do have a huge passion for the environment. I do work as a eco rep at Bowdoin. It's like you work for each of the 7 freshman dorms. You have an eco rep, and that person really is a person that motivates the students or peers to live a little bit more sustainably than usual. And so we have these like energy competitions, and you know, I send them weekly emails. We have meetings, and it's really cool. We've done a lot of cool stuff.
Nice. Yeah. You're planted in well distributed accounts across the
college. You know, as of right now, if you were to ask me what do I want to do, not exactly sure, but I can tell you what I like.
That's important. And as a freshman, you don't have to know.
Of course.
Yeah. But I think you're going to change the world. I think you said you want to change it from this location, though. You're going to stay in Maine?
Yes, I plan on staying in Maine. I think there's a lot of potential. There's a lot of immigrants. You know, the amount of immigrants here that have been doctors, lawyers, you know, engineers, they just don't speak the language, and they have so much potential. They just, you know, a lot of them here in America, you have to restart your entire education and it's really hard. It's really hard, especially when you come here with kids and you have to get settled down somehow, how to feed them, find some kind of housing, and, you know, sometimes you meet these people and you're like, oh, you were a doctor and now you're working, you're cutting up fish in the old port, and you're like, what? You know, that's not fair. And I think I'm trying to stay here to improve that. Maybe you do see the potential in people. There's a lot of people, and people here are supportive in Portland.
And if you're a bridge maker, you can make programs happen that can expedite
that's
that kind of thing.
That's
I know that in Minnesota, they had a program for physicians, and they put them on a fast track and got them residencies. In hard to serve areas, and they got them trained in the parts they didn't know. Maybe they didn't know the technology, or they, whatever, you know, that filled in the blanks of their learning specifically, and then they turned them out on the market, which was great because they have a dearth of physicians lots in the rural knowledge. Areas in Minnesota. Yeah. So now they're using that.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll do something like that.
I hope so.
Be a bridge.
I hope so. Mm-hmm.
You had a great quote when we visited earlier that I think speaks to your drive and resilience and loyalty and your vision too. And it was this: when you think that life is at its worst, it probably isn't. But we are humans and we can do anything. I really love that. What else can you tell us about digging deep when things get tough? I think you have some experience with that.
We have this saying that humans tend to overestimate how long or how much something will affect them. So let's say, for example, a close family relative dies, and you tell yourself, I don't know how to move on. I don't know what to do next. And yeah, it's okay to feel that way because we're human, yeah. But we overestimate how long something's going to affect us, because maybe 3 months after, you're fine. Maybe you still think about it, but you're fine. Life moves on, and we have to move on situations. And I can't tell you the amount of times I've heard bad news in my family back home in Iraq. A lot of my uncles died, a lot of for unjust reasons. My grandparents' house was burnt down multiple times, and you always hear these horrible things. Oh, your whole neighborhood was bombed, and you're like, wow, that's the only thing I only had of my family, and it's gone. But I try to look at a different perspective, because if other people can do it, so can I. If somebody else can move on from something super traumatic, and you ask yourself and you wonder, I could do that too, and that's what we're here to do. And I think, every time I get myself in a stressful situation, I try to think of it a different way. And I can't lie to you the amount of times that I've been brought down, and sometimes I don't think I can get up. But I learned from those experiences. Senior year is a lot. It's very tough, having to pay some bills and getting into college and the stress and going to work and waking up early and trying to get, good grades and all these things going through your head that a lot of people don't think about. They bring you down. And it brought me down for a little bit, but I hopped right back up.
And you made your bed.
I made my bed. I always made my bed. And that was the only thing. Sometimes that was the only thing I had together in my life.
That's a great example. Mo, you are a remarkably adaptable young man. You've lived in two countries, mastered foreign language, and got into Bowdoin College, where you get to use all of these skills that your mother taught you to work hard and be organized, to value education, and to always look toward the future, knowing that you can overcome anything. I wish you all the very best on your journey, and thank you so much for being my guest today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's such a pleasure to just to tell my story, and I'm glad I want people to hear. There's a lot of people like me. I'm not special.
I think you are special, and there are a lot of special people like you.
There is a lot. Yeah.
I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song that Mo selected for us. Mo, can you tell us a little bit about why you chose this song?
Oh, just as
we wrap up?
It comes from one of my favorite movies called I, Origins. It's called Dust It Off. Stress me out. Yeah.
Yeah.
It helps me calm down.
Wonderful. Hope this helps you calm down too. Have a wonderful Sunday. As the